Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and along with Senator Tim Carney, we're your moderators for this evening's discussion. Welcome to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Carney or his guest this evening, press star 3, that's star 3, on your phone's keypad at any time to ask questions. Now I'd like to introduce Senator Tim Carney.
Thank you, Hugh. And thank you to all the area residents who are participating on tonight's call. I'm Senator Tim Carney. I represent the 26th District in Delaware and Chester Counties. And we're holding this live telephone town hall to give you a chance to ask questions and hear from our panel of experts. We'll be discussing the coronavirus and the impact on local communities, and hopefully answer any question you may have. Ultimately, we need a community response to this pandemic, so it's an important time to pull together collectively. And as the governor has been saying for the last week or so, we're all in this together. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, just press star 3 on your phone. We've brought together experts from local government, from medicine, from public health, science, emergency services, and public education. So included, we have Dr. Monica Taylor, who's the vice chair of the Delaware County Council, Dr. George Avedian, who's the chief medical officer for the Delaware County Intercommunity Health. We have Jean Kastner from the Chester County Health Department, Dr. Gayatri Das, a bioscientist from the Franklin Institute. We have, for Mainline Health, we have Dr. Livernese, who's an infectious disease doctor, and Brian Duke, who's also with Mainline Health, but happens to be the former Secretary of Aging for the Commonwealth. We also have Tim Boyce, who's the Delaware County EMS Director, and Maria Edelberg, who's the Executive Director of the Delaware County Intermediate Unit.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, as we have some folks who have just joined us, can you provide just a short update in terms of there's news that's occurring each and every day in the update? Can you provide just a brief update while the callers are being screened?
Sure, that's fine, Hugh. Thank you. Remember, if you have a question, just press star 3 on your phone. We're going to start with give Dr. Taylor a chance to give us a quick county perspective. Dr. Taylor?
Hello, everyone. I'm Monica Taylor, Vice Chair of Delaware County Council, and I'll provide you a quick update on what's going on with Delaware County right now. Today, the Pennsylvania Department of Health announced 20 additional positive cases of COVID-19 in the state. There are 2 new cases in Delaware County, bringing the total number of cases in the county to 9. The total number of cases in the state is 96. Unlike neighboring counties, Delaware County does not have a county health department. We are dependent on the Pennsylvania Department of Health to test, investigate, quarantine, and monitor residents in Delaware County who have or may have COVID-19. The county is also dependent on the state to receive information and updates. Currently, the county is not given the municipality of where a patient lives, information on the contact tracing, or how many people have been quarantined as a result. Having more information would allow us to make more informed decisions and give better guidance to our residents. While we understand the Pennsylvania Department of Health is working around the clock and assisting the entire state, we as a county need to do more for our residents. Delaware County Council brainstormed about ways we can achieve this immediately and how we can help to protect our residents better. On Friday, Chester County graciously offered to assist Delaware County by allowing Chester County's Department of Health to serve as Delaware County's Department of Health. Over the weekend, Delaware County Council and the Chester County Board of Commissioners sent a letter to Governor Wolf requesting that the Chester County Health Department be authorized by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and its Department of Health to assume primary responsibility and work with Delaware County's elected officials and staff regarding all aspects of Delaware County's public health response to the coronavirus outbreak in an effort to better serve the community of Delaware County. Local elected leaders, both Republican and Democrat in the county, also sent Governor Wolf letters supporting council's request. We believe this will allow us to respond to the COVID-19 emergency more effectively. We spoke with the Chester County Commissioner, Marion Moskowitz, and the Pennsylvania Department of Health to attain the state's blessing on the intergovernmental cooperation proposed by Chester County and Delaware County. The Pennsylvania Department of Health expressed concerns that Chester County may not have the resources to meet both counties' needs pertaining to COVID-19. Chester County assured the state that they have conducted an analysis of their capacity, and they are very confident that they are able to serve both counties. The intergovernmental cooperation is now pending the approval from the governor. If the request is approved by the governor, Chester County, acting through its county health department, will provide public health services related to COVID-19 for Delaware County. Delaware County has also been working to offer residents testing sites for COVID-19, including drive-through testing locations. We hope to release more information on site locations and opening timeline later on this week. Over the weekend, Governor Wolf advised that non-essential retail facilities in Delaware County should close for 14 days. He also expanded this advisement statewide. All non-essential retail facilities in Pennsylvania should close. The governor gave examples of non-essential businesses. These include movie theaters, bars, gyms, hair salons, nail salons, spas, casinos, concerts, golf courses, and retail facilities, including shopping malls, except for pharmacy or other health care facilities within retail operations. The governor has ordered that all restaurants and bars close their dine-in facilities. Businesses that offer carryout, delivery, and drive-through food and beverage service may continue to operate, but eating and drinking inside restaurants and bars is temporarily prohibited. These businesses offering carryout, delivery, and drive-through food and beverage should employ social distancing best practices and be aware of the Trump administration's guidance to avoid gatherings of 10 or more people. Social distancing is essential as more Pennsylvanians are testing positive for COVID-19. By taking these steps now, we can protect public health and slow the spread of this virus. Businesses that do not adhere to this order could face enforcement actions. Essential retail facilities such as food stores, pharmacies, and gas stations and their suppliers will remain open. The goal is to prevent the spread of the virus, limiting unnecessary social outings like going to the movies, a bar, the gym, and clothes shopping is how we can accomplish this. We are urging business owners and residents to follow this guidance. It is important that we all listen to the guidance coming from the federal government, the state, and the county. We understand that shutting down for 2 weeks will hurt local business owners. Delaware County is working with our Commerce Director and other organizations and departments to request federal relief funding for businesses. We are working on ways we can lessen the financial burden for our small businesses, and we'll be sharing that information soon. We have some additional updates from the county to share. The Delaware County Government Center will be closed to the public on March 18th, 19th, and 20th. The Government Center offices will operate with a reduced and staggered staff to ensure the continuity of government. However, the offices will not be open to the public. Residents can call government offices on March 18th, 19th, and 20th, but are not able to access the building. More details about next week's operations of the Delaware County Government Center and the Delaware County Court of Common Pleas and Magisterial District Courts will be released in the upcoming days. We also want to update residents on the situation at George W. Hill, the county's prison. On March 13th, the GO Group, who runs the prison, received confirmation that an employee of the prison had tested positive for COVID-19. They followed guidance from the CDC and advised 23 prison employees who had been in contact with the individual who tested positive to self-quarantine at home. They placed 11 inmates who had been in contact with the infected employee in quarantine in a separate unit of the prison. GO is working with the Pennsylvania Department of Health. The 23 employees and 11 inmates were being tested. Of those 43 people tested, one additional employee of the prison has tested positive. The remaining 22 employees, as well as the 11 inmates, were all cleared by the state. In order to help prevent the spread of COVID-19, all Delaware County parks and recreation facilities operated by the county have canceled their programming. Buildings and the structures located at the Delaware County parks are also closed. Residents are free to enjoy the parks and trails, but all programming, buildings, and structures are closed. We remind residents to practice social distancing while at the parks. The county has created a website dedicated to information on the coronavirus, including prevention, resources, and an FAQ section. with a link to the PA Health Department and CDC. The website is www.delcopa.gov. Click on the coronavirus button. Residents are also encouraged to register for the Delco Alert notification system, which alerts residents of updates and emergencies. You can go to the county's homepage and click on the Delco Alert button to sign up. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. I think we're going to go to a question. I think we'll talk to, how about Scott from media?
Scott from media, okay. Scott, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and his guest.
Hi, good evening, everyone. How are you?
Very well.
Okay. My question was about the Delaware County Health Board. You know, it was disbanded, and I welcome the new information that the doctor relayed about Chester County cooperating and, you know, collaborating with Delaware County to establish this this board that was abruptly taken away. I had had dealings with the old board in the past, and I'm welcoming this this new information. I did not know that, that Chester County was going to help us out. I thank the doctor for providing that. And that was about all I had to ask, but in the future, are we going to establish a Board of Health here in Delaware County?
Well, Scott, thank you for that call and the question. And we are, the county, I can speak for Dr. Taylor real quick and just say that the county is in the process of establishing a new health department. It's going to take about a year and a half about to really pull it together because it's obviously very complicated and requires a lot. But that was something that I know is very important to everybody on county council, and that they have a really nice community-wide effort around helping put that to, putting together a health department that will really serve Delaware County.
Scott, thank you very much for your call. Remember, if you have a question for Senator Carney or his guest, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, you ready to go back to another call? Senator, you ready to go back to another call?
Sure. We can go back to, how about Kathleen from Springfield?
Kathleen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney.
Thank you for taking my call, Senator. Above all, the priority is everyone's health, and we all know this. However, there's a lot of added stress and concern where people's next paycheck is coming from. Is there any status on how the government was, they were talking about a tax credit to employers, and would you recommend that employees file for unemployment at this time?
Okay.
Hi, this is Sarah from Senator Carney's team, and we are working on a package, and yes, the wait period for unemployment filing has been waived, and so you can, as soon as your hours have been cut or your pay has stopped, you can apply for unemployment.
Okay. Is there any relief that is going to be coming to small businesses, the status, or is that still unknown?
We're working on that as well. We did. We had a call today, and there are some low-interest loans available, but it's almost like those interest rates really haven't caught up to the Fed changes yet. And so we're folks have asked that they be even lower, so we're encouraging people to actually talk with their own banks about what might be available, but we're still continuing to work on that in Harrisburg.
I will say it's a hot topic of conversation.
They also have a tax credit to employers. Is that anything?
It's been under discussion. I know there's been, we've heard some of that on the federal level as well as on the state level, but nothing has been really decided yet. But it's good that you know these concerns and that we can continue to work on.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Stay safe and healthy.
It's you too. Thanks for your call.
Kathleen, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we'll go back to the callers. Do we want to go to Simone?
Sure.
Simone, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney.
Good evening, and thank you. My question is, how do you distinguish between the flu and the coronavirus?
Sure. I think I'm going to ask Dr. Livernese to answer that question.
Hi, that's a very good question, and quite frankly, something physicians struggle with. They both can present in a similar fashion. The coronavirus often presents in a more slow and drawn out manner. Flu tends to be a little more abrupt, but there's a lot of overlap. And so unfortunately, you need to do certain tests to really distinguish the two to be sure. And the main testing for both of those diseases is actually getting a nasal swab that we can test for corona as well as for influenza.
Okay, so based on that, would I qualify? Who determines whether I'm qualified to get that test or not?
Well, it really depends on what your clinical symptoms are. So I would suggest if you're sick, probably the first thing is a phone call to your physician's office to determine the best place for you to be evaluated. If you're mildly ill, they may simply tell you to stay at home. If you're sicker, they may ask you to come to the office or go to a testing center that are being set up in various locations to be tested. If you're severely ill, you need to be in an emergency room because you need a higher level of care and also diagnostic studies such as chest x-rays and blood tests.
Okay, so it'll be up to the doctor to determine whether or not I should be tested for the coronavirus as opposed to if I feel like I need to.
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
One thing we don't want to do is to do testing for the coronavirus on people who do not have symptoms that are suggestive of it. And one of the problems we have is we don't know how to interpret a positive or a negative test in somebody who has no symptoms.
Okay. All right, but yet they can't determine which is which because they overlap. But
that's true. But we saw somebody recently who had a fever, a little bit of a cough, a sore throat, thought they had coronavirus. They actually had a strep throat. We were able to examine them, make that determination, and treat them for it.
Okay.
Doctor, isn't the first step always to test for the flu first? Because that's an easy test for you to do?
Correct. Generally, the sequence would be to try to exclude influenza first. And that test generally get back in a fairly rapid fashion. There's a longer delay in getting the results from the corona test. If it's done through the State Department of Health, the turnaround is 1 or 2 days. If it goes to a commercial lab, it may be 3 to 5 days. The flu test in an emergency room, most emergency rooms, you'll get back within an hour or two. In a physician's office, maybe within 24 hours, or sometimes even less, depending on how close they are to the testing facility.
Okay, thanks very much.
Simone, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Barry. Barry, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and guests.
Yes, thank you for accepting my call. So I have two sort of joint questions to ask. The first is, while I heard the president talking about numbers of people, I was not I didn't understand why on the one hand they talk about 50 people, which is a lot of people, you know, in contact versus 10. And so I was wondering which is the real policy and what is the right way to go with that.
Thank you, Barry, for that question. I think I'm going to call on Gene Kasner from the Chester County Health Department to answer that one. Gene?
Okay.
Thank you. And so what we're seeing is as we get more data in, not only within Pennsylvania but nationally, we are we're able to analyze the data and adjust what the recommendations are. So while it started out at one point at 5,000 and it went to 250, it went to 50, now it's down to 10, I think that's just a sign that we have more data to suggest that the spread can occur in much smaller groups.
In smaller groups too. Okay.
Absolutely. I know in Chester County, we literally have recently identified a presumptive positive when they were calling it that at a small house party. It was a small private little house party that happened to still proceed. So that's really why we're stressing, if you're sick with any illness, don't care what it is, stay home.
Okay. Okay, that pretty much answers the question. Thank you for taking my call, and everybody, good health and stay well.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Before we take our next caller, I think I'd like to bring Dr. Jayatri Das on the line to kind of talk about this from a kid's perspective. Dr. Das works at the Franklin Institute, and she wants to make sure we don't forget about our kids during this whole thing. So what do you think? Can we, Jayatri, can we hear from you?
Hi, everybody. So I'm a mom of 9-year-old twins, so I am in the same boat as everybody who is trying to figure out what to do with your kids while they're at home from school. And, you know, I just want to echo what was said before, is that, you know, social distancing is no less important when it comes to kids. In fact, in some ways, it's even harder, because what we know from the data so far are that kids actually seem to show fewer symptoms than adults, even though they contract the virus at the same rate. So far, we're seeing that, you know, up to 10% of kids don't show any symptoms at all, yet they're still capable of passing the virus along to family members and other people that they encounter. So, you know, it is important to try and keep your kids isolated as much as we're all trying to isolate ourselves. I know, you know, people are asking, well, what about outdoor spaces? Can we take kids to playgrounds? You know, be cautious with that as well. You know, not only can kids pass the virus to each other, but we also have some preliminary data showing that the virus can survive on surfaces. So looking like 24 hours on cardboard, 2 to 3 days on plastic and stainless steel, so all of the surfaces that are in playgrounds. So it's tough, but, you know, we all got to just do our best and keep our kids at home.
Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate that. We're going to take another call now. Let's go to, how about to Linda from media?
Linda, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and his guest.
Okay. Hi, Senator Carney. I had a question. Workplaces that are non-essential. My daughter actually works for a company that's still calling her in, and they're actually making her, you know, she works for an energy company where she weatherproofs homes, so she's only 21 years old, but she has to go into strangers' homes and, you know, work in their houses. And I'm just fearful that if she brings something home, because I take care of my dad. I'm elderly. I'm not young myself, but I take care of my 88-year-old father, who was very compromised, and I wouldn't want her to bring anything to me. But yet she feels that she has to go to work because she would get fired. They said if you have paid time off, you could take that, but she does not have any. So she's afraid that she would just get fired if she just doesn't show up for work. So I didn't know what non-essential, you know, I do think her work is non-essential, but yet she's being asked to go in.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. That, you know, I think I've had more conference calls about this particular issue today than any others. It's everybody thinks that their business is essential kind of thing, but I think I would agree with you that in this case in particular, this is the wrong kind of social interaction that we'd be allowing, to have people like your daughter working in people's homes that they don't know in a really sort of in an intimate way. And I don't think it fits the governor's definition that we're issued today about what's essential and what's not. Maybe Dr. Taylor, can you give us a little bit of input from the Delco side?
Yes, so this is actually something that we've had a few questions about also, and what we've been looking at is we've had our commerce director, and we've also been talking with the Chamber of Commerce. Today we actually had a call with as many businesses as possible, in the county who signed up for the call. And so there were over 100 businesses on the call today. And we were talking to them about, we had a lot of questions about this and trying to encourage them to allow employees to do social distancing and understanding what is actually essential to services. Yeah. That's pretty much where we got to with that.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Taylor.
So as a mother, should I tell her not to go to work?
Tell her that, you know, you can look up on the governor's web site. There's the, he issued a directive about essential and non-essential businesses that pretty much spells out what, where it should and should be. So I think that's something you should talk to your daughter and her employer about.
Okay. I just don't want to see her lose her job because she needs it. So.
Of course, but we're...
And I know, I think it has should be all or nothing. Like, I think this is not going to work if it's not everybody in this together and everybody doing it. And that's, you know, companies are not following suit. And this is a company that actually, you know, gets contracts from PICO. So that's what I don't understand. I don't want to mention names and get anybody in trouble, you know.
Well, I would use the governor's latest directive on that as your sort of your ammunition on that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Linda, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we'll go back to the callers. We'll go to Christine. Christina, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and Guest.
Hi. Thanks so much for hosting this tonight. I appreciate it. My question is that I'm aware that restaurants have banned dine-in and they're now doing delivery and takeout. But my concern is that the food may be being prepared by somebody who is COVID positive and doesn't realize it. So are we putting ourselves at risk for eating food that is prepared by other people, particularly if it's food that's not hot food, you know, in other words, sandwiches, you know, things like that, salads. So that's, I'd really like to know that.
Well, thanks. That's an excellent question, I think. Let's look at it from a couple different points of view. Maybe we can get Gene Kasner from the Chester County Health Department to comment first.
Absolutely. If a food establishment is licensed in Pennsylvania, they are required, regardless of what situation we're under, to continue to abide by the Pennsylvania Food Code. So, for example, in Chester County, we have reached out to our food establishments and reminded them of this, even as it relates to our schools who are trying to distribute food to students who are under the National School Lunch Program. So for those in Chester County, we've actually had our food inspectors serve as an expert consultant to our school districts to ensure that because they're delivering food in a different way and preparing different food than they normally do during a school day, that the food does remain safe. So under Pennsylvania code, individuals who are preparing and serving food have to abide by regulations relevant to the health of their employees.
Thank you, Gene, for that. Dr. Avedian, can you comment on that as well?
You know what? I think Gene hit the nail right on target there. It's basically a situation that is regulated by the state, and you know, the consumer really should have minimal concern as long as the establishment is following the guidelines that are set by the state. And also that is enforced on the local level. So I have no qualms about going out and picking up food on a drive-through or curbside delivery.
So the guidelines state that, you know, food can't be prepared by people who are ill, like have obvious symptoms. Follow-up question, again, if the person is asymptomatic, you know, but infected and you know, don't know it yet. Can we pick up this virus through food, I guess is my main question.
That's a good question. the virus can harbor itself on various surfaces. It can, if the food is sitting out, and let's say it's a cold sandwich or some packaged and prepared item, and the individual who is doing the preparing has the virus, yes, the virus can be transmitted to a plastic surface or a wax paper surface, and then it could be subsequently passed on to another individual. There's always that possibility. That is less likely than person-to-person contact and exposure through coughing and sneezing and the typical mode of transmission of these viruses.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you for that. It's obviously a tough call. But I think what both of our professionals were telling us is that we should, the rules are kind of in place, and we should have a confidence in the in our restaurants and food service. Okay, should we go to the next call?
Yep, Christina, thank you very much for your call, Senator. We're going to go to Janet. Janet, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and his guest.
Well, good evening, Senator Carney and everyone there. I'd like to know, I am a senior citizen. I have to have my driver's license renewed, and I'd like to know by April the 7th, what are the conditions now? There's more than 10 people at these centers to have your license renewed. Have they made any provisions for that?
Well, yes. As you probably know, the driver's license centers are closed right now for at least 2 weeks, and that anybody who had to get their driver's license renewed by April was given a grace period of an extra month. And that's something that's and if they remain closed longer, then they'll revisit that. But I think
there's more than 10 people at a driver's license. Sometimes there's 50 or 60, and I mean what. You know, how are we going to be there with all these people?
Well, that's why they're closed now, and we're going to reassess the situation as it moves forward. But it may be that, if they are open up, we still have these kind of restrictions in place, they might only let 10 people in at a time.
Okay. So that's what I wanted to be reassured of, that I wouldn't have to sit there with, like, 30 or 40 people and not knowing that somebody may have the virus.
Oh, no, Janet, nobody wants to put you in any danger. We hope you stay safe.
All right. Well, thank you, and also you. I appreciate everything that you've talked about this evening. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too.
Janet, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Mary. Mary, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and guests.
Hello. Thank you, Senator, for taking my call. I know I'm not getting my priorities out of order, but talking about illness comes first, but now there's the big thing coming up of the elections, and I wonder if anybody has started any talks or debates about what they're going to do about the election period and the time coming up very soon for us in Pennsylvania.
Well, Mary, thank you for that call, and yes, we want to concentrate on the health, but as a senator, I can tell you that elections are never quite far from anybody's mind. It's a hot topic of conversation that's going on in Harrisburg. They've been talking about it for over a week. I think the chances are very good that we're going to push back the primary election from into May or even June at this point. I've heard different dates suggested, but there seems to be a lot of positive movement on that in terms of people really understanding the issue. I was kind of very disappointed that the special elections happened today. There was one up in Bucks County, for example, which is, I guess, still going on. Polls are still open up there. So,
Have they talked about maybe having a mailing in our votes this time?
Well, yes, because this time the new rules go into effect on absentee no fault absentee balloting, which is basically essentially is mail in balloting. So definitely. Look up on I believe there's information on the county webpage for through the election board. Dr. Taylor, is that true?
Yes.
is true. And what we're also doing is we're trying to push for people to sign up for the mail-in ballots, too. The more people we can do, get to do the mail-in ballots, that also helps with less people. And we're also moving around some of our – we're looking at a full-on plan once we get the final date change from the state, whenever they decide to change the primary. We're looking at a full plan on how our elections operations will go from there.
Sounds good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, how will we know? Will they be broadcasting that in plenty of time so we can get pick up our ballots?
Absolutely. Well, you can request a mail-in ballot now.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff.
Thank you.
I think before we take our next caller, I want, since we've had a couple people talking about issues with seniors, maybe Brian Duke can get on the line and give us a quick idea about what seniors in particular should be thinking about during this crisis.
Well, thank you for that, and it's great to be with you this evening. You know, the first thing I think of when I think of our older adults is I think about care of self, and so all the things we're hearing out there have become very important. I ran into a neighbor the other day, and they said, do you really think all this stuff is necessary, washing hands and distancing and keeping ourselves away from the chance of becoming infected? And the answer to that is a strong yes. At Mainline Health, we've been focusing a lot. You know, we're focused on human care, but we also focus on what we can do to fulfill that promise to people to provide quality and safe care, and that includes our older adults. So when we do things like implement visitor restrictions at our hospitals and screen visitors when they come to the hospital, ask our volunteers to maybe put their activities and duties on hold, cancel our community events. It can seem harsh to all people and particularly maybe our older adults, but in fact we're doing that so that we can continue to provide quality and safe care for all the people we serve. And we encourage older adults to stay in touch with people. There's innovative ways we can do that, using FaceTime or using our cell phones or our landlines to call each other. Having conversations several times a day could be a good thing to do. Encouraging other members of the family to call you is a way to stay active. If you feel like you're going to stay in and isolated from others, it's important to stay connected to others. The area agencies on aging in our region are all, while the senior centers may be closing due to concerns about safety and precaution, they can be contacted for information referral. They can be contacted to receive nutrition. They can be contacted if there's a need to report a need about elder abuse or any of those services. So please reach out to your area agency on aging. And then we've been working closely with our post-acute care partners throughout the region, which includes our skilled nursing facilities, and we're so grateful that they're out there doing the good care they are, assisted living facilities, personal care homes. We're out there working with them as they provide safe care as well in partnership with us, and so we're grateful for that as well. So stay connected, even though you may have to stay at home. Make sure you have what you need and let others know what you need so that people can help. And reach out if you do need help to not only Mainline Health, but reach out to area agencies on aging and other resources.
Thank you, Brian. That's sage advice.
Thanks.
We're going to go to another caller now.
Okay. Senator, we're going to go to Lisa in Swarthmore. Lisa, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and Guts.
Good evening. Thank you for the town hall meeting and also for the Delaware County Alert System. It's nice in this age of instant communication to be able to access that. I noticed I got notifications that I think it was Marple Township and Haverford Township have declared a state of emergency, and I'm wondering what is the criteria for doing that? Is it a financial benefit to the township to do that? Does it qualify them for certain things? So basically, what are the advantages or disadvantages, if any, to doing that, and what powers does it give the township?
Okay, Lisa, thanks for that. I'm going to ask Tim Boyce, the director of the Delaware County EMS, to respond to that. Tim?
Thank you, Chairman. What a declaration of disaster, a declaration of emergency does for a municipality, a county, and the state, it really allows us to do two major things. The first, it's prepare for an imminent threat. A lot of what we do is purchasing. We have normal purchasing requirements. If I would reference a snowstorm, you go to bid, you go to contract, and there's an ethical way we do business. We're going to maintain that, but it allows us to hire people quickly without the distractions or the time that it takes. If we needed to hire nurses, hire tents, a municipality needed to rent signage, it allows the municipality to best practices, but to get to equipment quicker. The other part, I think, for government, it's really important, and one of the recommendations we have, it allows governments to suspend or alter public meetings. We all have commissions, council meetings, township meetings, and they're published, and there's rules that we abide by. But in a public safety emergency, perhaps they can move to a remote, like this town hall, where it allows us to be flexible to address the needs. So there's a lot of preventive benefits. It streamlines government, still remain responsible, but it just is, in this social distancing world, the ability to suspend public meetings like elections or different things like that, the declaration allows us to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that. You know, we're thinking about more about our kids in terms of what the things are. I wonder if we can call on Maria Edelberg just to give us a little bit about what's happening with the public schools during all this, during this crisis.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Carney. As everybody is aware, the governor has shut down all schools, both public, parochial, as well as all preschools in Delaware County through March 30th. At this time, we, as the intermediate unit, have routine calls with all the district leadership, really taking a look at how we can put services in place around meals. And I think there was a really nice article in the Delaware Times, also taking a look at how there could be some enrichment activities and some suggestions to do at home with our students and your children during this time. We are still working closely with the Department of Education to really get some good guidance on what we might need to be looking at moving forward past March 30th. Really looking at what's going to happen. Is there going to be a need to look at making up these days, not making up these days? And right now that is with guidance through PDE and the state legislature. So we're really looking and patiently waiting to get more guidance. You know, the other piece is many schools, the intermediate unit, also operates early childhood programs, which are also closed. Again, we will wait for continued guidance from the state to see what's going to happen after March 30th. In addition, the schools, along with county government, thank you, Dr. Taylor and Mr. Boyce, we have been in very close contact to ensure that there's ongoing communication at the county level, as well as ongoing directions that the county's taken that we can be supportive of, as well as them being supportive of the schools. I also believe today there was a conference call through Mr. Boyce's office with many of the schools in the IU and other county agencies to look at how food could continue to be delivered to those families that are in need. So it's really, we're really in uncharted waters at this time, looking for ongoing guidance. The other thing that many of us are looking at is upcoming board meetings and how we might be able to conduct business. And I think Mr. Boyce just talked very eloquently about when something is declared an emergency, could we be doing online meetings? How do you get public access? So there's a lot going on right now in education, but a lot of it we're also looking for guidance from the Pennsylvania Department of Education and our legislators when we're looking at some reliefs around the regulations. Thank you, Senator Carney.
Thank you very much for that. We know there's it's kind of a moving target, and we hope we're going to get our kids back in school as soon as we can. I think we're going to go back to a question now. I believe we have okay. Go ahead, you.
Okay. Senator, we're going to go to Regina. Regina, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and his guests.
I think my question was answered. If this is the Regina you're speaking to.
Are you Regina from Lansdowne?
Yes, I am. Well, the question was, with the symptoms, I guess if you feel you have some of the symptoms, you should just bunker down for 2 weeks. I was confused about the what temperature. I guess if you have any temperature, then that's considered like a symptom. One place said, the government place said 99.1 for elderly people, and a Montgomery County report said 100.4. I think, well, I'm just confused exactly.
Okay. Why don't we get Dr. Livernese to maybe comment on that real quick?
So I guess there are really two questions there. The first is what constitutes a true fever? And that's always a bit of a controversy and has to be taken in context. In the strictest sense, 100.4 or higher is technically a fever. But we recognize certain times there are people who cannot have mount a normal temperature. And often in the elderly, they're not able to push their temperature up as high as they would when they are younger. So you always have to interpret it based on the specific individual. And in terms of symptoms, I would not say if you have mild symptoms, you should hunker down. I would say if you have the sniffles and you think you have allergies or you have a minor cold and otherwise feel perfectly well, hunker down. But if you start to develop more symptoms than that, I would certainly suggest a phone call to your doctor to let them help you interpret what's going on and know what to anticipate when you actually have to get help, as opposed to just sitting at home until you're so sick you have to go to the emergency room. That's the part we'd like to avoid.
Absolutely. Thank you, doctor, for that.
Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you, Regina. Thanks for calling. Hope you're well.
Regina, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the questions. We can go to Melissa. Melissa, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and his guest.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having this town hall. I think it's terrific that you're including your constituents and their concerns. My question is as follows. Someone listed a bunch of statistics about the number of various cases in different parts of Delaware and Chester County, and we know that the number is much higher than that. How do we know? Because there's no testing. In my experience, and I know you guys are talking about talking to your doctor and getting a test, the reality is that's not happening. You can talk to your doctor, but there are not tests available to be taken for someone who has a fever and a headache and a cough and is fatigued. They're telling you to stay home, and that's the reality of what is happening. Even people calling Mainline Health and people who have doctors at University of Pennsylvania. So I'm going to ask you what can be done to loosen the restrictions of getting tested.
Thank you for that, Melissa. It's obviously a big point of contention. I know that we're constantly increasing our testing capacity. A week ago, it was really terrible. It's getting better. Maybe I can get Dr. Avedian to comment on that, because I know we're starting to talk about a change in the way we're doing testing.
Sure.
Terrific.
Well, first of all, as was mentioned earlier, in the state of Pennsylvania, we have 96 confirmed positives. We also have 879 confirmed negatives. The rate-limiting step for us in a broad evaluation of the community is the number of kits available. And we were earlier today discussing doing drive-through clinics where individuals could pull up in their vehicle, get a quick nasal swab, and we could evaluate that way. The other step that was limiting us was the PPE, the personal protective equipment. Any medical personnel that would be at a screening site would need to be properly attired to protect themselves. And, you know, we had a hard time getting all that equipment together. We in Delaware County with our partners in Chester County are looking to kick out the screening process this weekend, hopefully, and then ramp it up quickly in the following week. But you are very correct in saying that there's probably many cases out there that are not being diagnosed. We are, however, ramping up our capabilities, and we are hoping to do a more broader screening in the days and weeks to come.
Great. Thank you very much. Can I just follow up with the question that if you have been told that you're presumed positive but haven't had a test, and I've been in contact with someone who is in this position, what are people that have been around you supposed to do? She's been given no guidelines as to what she's supposed to tell people that she's been around since last Tuesday when you know, she came down with symptoms. And so we're sort of at a loss as to how people are supposed to handle this. I mean, this is what's happening out there.
What you'd look at are two different types of individuals in the community. And, for example, if we have someone who is ill, sick, and needs medical attention, those individuals, and they may require hospitalization, those individuals will go into isolation where we know that they are ill, and then we are separating them to protect the rest of the community. Then we have another group that we label as those in quarantine. And someone in quarantine is an individual who is in their normal state of health but may have been exposed to COVID-19. And for the two-week window from their time of exposure, they're being monitored and being asked to limit their exposure to others. So we quarantine those that have been exposed. Individuals who have the disease, you know, we treat them a little bit more aggressively and try to isolate them. Of course, we're going back to your original concern. There are people out there who, unfortunately, we have been unable to test. And in the days and weeks to come, we're hoping to be able to ramp up that ability.
Senator, this is Jean Kasner with the Chester County Health Department. Do you mind if I add to some of the comments?
Oh, absolutely. Please, Jean.
So I want to make sure, because I know there's a lot of communication going out through various channels, including the media, about, you know, public testing. In Chester County, and what we would recommend for Delaware County, should we get an agreement with the state to allow Chester County Health Department to assist Delaware County, is we have to look at this concept of testing at three levels. One is testing individuals who are showing up at an emergency room and have a need due to the severity of them being assessed at the emergency room to be tested. Now, what we don't want to do is overload our emergency rooms with individuals who aren't there for other critical issues. They just need to be tested. So that is what I've been calling kind of our priority one, because we don't want to cripple our healthcare system and not have appropriate capacity at our hospitals. The next level is someone who has a doctor who has done the clinical assessment, as we've heard earlier in this call, but doesn't have the capacity to do the test, to collect the specimen for the test. In those situations, we need to provide an avenue for them, because they are the highest risk individuals who have the highest risk of transmitting the virus. And then the third is everyone else. So as we think about it, we have to really kind of work through those priority areas. As much as folks want to be tested across our general population, because of the limitations on supplies and the risk levels, we truly do have to kind of work through it in a systematic way. And that's hopefully what we're leaning toward, not only in Chester County, but in any collaboration with Delaware County. And then the other aspect of it is someone cannot be determined to be a presumptive positive without a formal test, laboratory test. So if the individual was told they're a positive, but they were never tested, I would say we probably need to reevaluate that individual either through their primary care provider or through some consultation, whether it's with the state or the Chester County Health Department, because that may be a little misleading. And I would hate that individual to think that they're a presumptive positive when we haven't actually had lab data to confirm that. So thank you.
Thanks very much for that. You know, we, believe it or not, we've been at this for an hour already. We're kind of at the end of our time. We're going to stretch out our time a little bit and squeeze in a couple more calls. But if you're on the line holding and we don't get to your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question in a voicemail for us, and we can get you answers that way. Okay, so let's go to the next call then.
Okay, Senator, we're going to go to Eve. Eve, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and guests.
Hi, thank you everyone for everything that you're doing. I think everyone's just doing an incredible job. My question is about community spread. Do we have evidence of community spread in Delaware, Chester County? If we don't, is that because we're just not testing widely enough, or does it even matter at this point if we've moved to mitigation?
That's a great question. I think, Jean, you want to handle that one first?
Sure. I can speak for Chester County. So in Chester County, we do not have community spread, and it is twofold. One, we're not testing as many people as we likely should. And two, those we have tested and done appropriate contact tracing on, we actually can trace it back to a presumptive positive related to some aspect of travel, whether that's domestic or international. So because our investigation leads back to a known positive that started with travel, we are not experiencing community spread in Chester County.
And great. Thanks so much for that.
Is it possible that if we're only testing people who is the criteria still that in order to be tested, you have to have had contact with a known positive?
Well, I think we were saying before that we're starting to change the testing criteria. I wonder if Dr. Avedian could answer that.
Yes. First, let me also comment on the community spread. That is an ongoing, dynamic, fluid situation. We in Delaware County had two more positives in the past 24 hours. And what happens in those cases, the contact tracing is ongoing. We have not identified community spread in Delaware County from the information we're getting from the state. So, as I said, you know, this is an ongoing fluid process. And I'm sorry, what was the question was?
Well, the second part of the question was just if we're even looking for that anymore, or are we just kind of assuming it's there as we move to mitigation?
Okay. Obviously, statewide, I think all the efforts that our state senator and state reps and our governor has put forward are really focused on mitigation at this point. However, that being said, we still are evaluating each positive case by case and working them up. The state is doing the contact tracing in Delaware County at the present time. So these two individuals, for example, that were identified in the past 24 hours, all of their contacts are being searched and identified, and appropriate measures are being taken. Are there people that are slipping through the cracks? Probably. But, you know, this is, as I said, it's a very dynamic process.
Thank you, and thank you for everybody's hard work. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Eve. You know, I should say that we've had almost 2,000 people on this call, so it's and an awful lot of questions that we're not going to get to. So again, if we don't get to you and we do wind up having to get off the phone, then stay on the line and leave a voicemail message, and we'll get the answer to your question. So let's go to the next one.
Okay, Senator, we're going to go to Nate in Upper Darby. Nate, go ahead. You're live with Senator Cornyn and guests.
Good evening. Thank you, Senator, for your work and all of your guests.
Thank you, for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you kind of gave my question away. but as a pastor, obviously, I'm being asked by our parishioners if we're going to be having worship services. And again, because of my community work, I've been asked by other faith-based leaders as to what they should do. I've tried to be as informative with this as I can, but I haven't seen nor have I heard any direction from the federal, state, or local government as to how faith-based leaders should have that conversation with their leaders. I was wondering if you could help me with that tonight.
Well, thanks for that question, Pastor. And obviously, you know, this is a situation that's been changing, and it's different now than it was even in this past weekend. Now with the groups of 10, I think your church is more crowded than that typically.
Yes.
it would be tough to get all those people together at one time, and even with social distancing would be difficult. I wonder who from our panel wants to comment on that.
This is Jean with Chester County Health Department.
Hi,
last
Jean.
Week, hey, last week we had a call with our faith-based organizations, and you know, our push was to really reconsider services as you are faced with now, and really trying to get them to consider virtual or other mechanisms, even if the county could support some of that, offering some technical solutions for them so they could continue it, or doing pre-recordings and posting them on the website so people could listen to, whether it was readings or a sermon or group discussions. So we kind of offered several different strategies and then kind of fielded unmet needs, if you will, from our community faith-based leaders thereafter. So it was kind of a, here's the lay of the land, think about this before you're forced to. Now, clearly, they're already in that position now because of the, you know, limits on number of people in the groups. So I think really where they're starting to try to focus is how do they use their organization to serve others in lieu of doing having the services. And that's just the nature of where our organizations happen to be at the time.
I see. Thank you. This is the first time that I've received any kind of direction, so I appreciate that.
Well, Pastor, thank you for calling in today.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, we're going to try to squeeze in a couple more.
Okay.
Let's go.
Senator, we'll go to Lucille.
Sure.
We'll go to Lucille. Go ahead, Lucille. You're live with Senator Cornyn.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this town hall tonight. I would just like to revisit the earlier question the lady had about unemployment compensation. I completed my application this morning on the UCPA.gov website. I got through the drop-down box, for the reason I am no longer employed. And, of course, it didn't say, you know, anything about COVID-19. I just simply chose still employed. Now, just before printing out everything, the Pennsylvania Employment Compensation Handbook indicated that benefits are paid biweekly every week, and it goes on to say a little further down that the first week is considered a waiting week. I would not be paid for that, but you know, I would be paid thereafter. My question is, since this is also new, what do I do to ensure that I am paid for that first week? Is there someone I can call or write to, or just speak with my employer? Can you help me with that?
Absolutely, Lucille. As you might guess, it's a kind of a fluid situation where things are developing all the time. But our understanding is that you will get paid for that first week. The best thing for you to do is actually call my office in the morning, and one of our constituent service people can walk you through the whole issue.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your time this evening, all of you.
Thank you, Lucille. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to the next call.
Okay, Senator, we're going to go to Margaret in Vermont. Margaret, go ahead. You're live with Senator Carney and guests.
Hello, Senator Carney and everyone who is there. Thank you all for your help with all these questions. I'm calling to ask about, I was on the telephone today with my accountant, and I am going to go to the post office tomorrow to mail all my tax information to him. He lives in Jenkintown. So I'm mailing my information to him. He'll process the paperwork. I guess mail it to me. I will sign it. I have to mail it back to him. Anyway, so the question is there any chance that, in case the situation gets worse, would the post office possibly close? Or if that would happen, would there be an extension in the deadline for the post office, or for the tax, the deadline?
So the short answer is, the way these things stand right now, no, the post office is not going to close.
Okay.
That's considered, I know that they have different criteria for how they deal with the public, and they're trying to protect everybody because they deal with a lot of things that come from a lot of different places. I was also on a call today where they're talking about the federal tax deadline it sounds like it's going to be moved. At least there's going to be grace periods allowed in regard to the tax season.
Okay, good, because I was speaking with two other people today, and they also need to meet with their accountants, and, you know, is that a safe thing to do? So, you know, it's just a question of
stay 6 feet apart and don't have more than 10 people in the room.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all your help with that. Appreciate it.
And wash your hands, Margaret.
I do all the time.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's all the time we have for tonight. I really want to thank everybody who called in. In particular, I want to thank Dr. Taylor, Dr. Avedian, Gene Kastner, Dr. Days, Dr. Livernese, Brian Duke, Tim Boyce, and Maria Edelberg for joining us on this call. Like I said before, we had over a couple thousand people who were attending this, and we had a lot of people in the queue for questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to those particular answers. But again, if you do have a question, stay on the line, and you'll be able to leave the question at the voicemail for me, and we'll get back to you. So thank you again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 610-544-6120 or visit my website at senatorcarney.com. This is an unprecedented time we're going through here right now, and I'm going to quote the governor, we're all in this together. Good luck, everybody. Thanks and good night.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you to all who have joined us this evening. Enjoy the rest of your evening.